It's that time of the year where all the spirits come out to play. A terror grips the streets, and your darkest fears come to life. Pull in close as we journey through the darkness into the realms of the Monster Cast.
And hello out there, everyone in podcast land, and welcome back to the Front Row Podcast, the podcast for people who actually like movies, right here on NPR Illinois, and the latest episode of Monster Cast 2019. Of course, October is where everything goes creepy crawly here at the Front Row, and my favorite time of the year, because my wife Sarah and I get to do our horror film spotlights here for Monster Cast, and this is installment number two of that. I'm Jeremy Gechner, the editor-in-chief, and with me, as I said, my fellow lover of all things horror, Mrs. Sarah Baltusevich-Gechner. What's up?
Not much.
This is Sarah's favorite day, almost, because almost as much as Ghost, she loves the creature features as well in our Monster Cast spotlights, and that is why we are bringing you our monster-focused one this year. It is David Cronenberg's The Fly.
Yeah.
You know, this is one that you like a lot more than me, I think.
That's good to know.
No. Not that I don't like it or anything, but I think that you have like a pretty like deep love for this film, if I remember right.
I mean, if you don't, you might as well just leave.
What are you talking about?
This movie's great. Yeah, it's great.
Does it say a lot about like the human condition and life and the ability to transmorph into mutant creatures?
Sure.
Yeah, okay.
This is more about just turning into a fly and vomiting on your donuts, sucking it back up, picking nasty hairs out your back.
I mean,
your jaw falling off, your nose, yeah. Your ear, keeping a natural history museum.
Breaking bikers' arms off in arm wrestling contests.
Sexing up some ladies.
Dude, for real though, so much sex in this movie.
Keeping on guys' hands.
His name is pretty terrible, though, so he kind of deserves to lose
a
hand.
Stathis Borens.
Stathis Borens. Man, we are getting so far ahead of everything here. All right, so
this movie's like 40 years, 30 years old. It's no secret.
I was about to say, so I can't remember the exact year this came out. I want to say 1981, 82, maybe? Or maybe that's too young. Really. Maybe like 86. Sarah's going to look that up for me.
1986.
There you go. A year before I was born, a year after Sarah was born.
And I watched it like when I was one.
No. That's right.
Probably when I was like six or seven, to be honest.
Yeah. So the basics of this movie, Jeff Goldblum, he of awesome stuttering fame of Hollywood, and just legendary acting ability. He plays Seth Brundle, who is a scientist who's working on an incredibly world transforming experiment in his spare time.
It's teleportation.
Yeah,
dude.
He's working on teleportation.
It's like these two sweet pods with like a really old computer hooked up to them.
Yeah, with a literal Commodore 64 attached to it.
And he's right now only transferring inanimate objects.
Right.
He's working up to...
Yeah, he's trying to do biomatter, but he's finding that the skin and such is presenting problems with the transporter and such. So he can do inanimate objects till the day is long, but that even like goes on to like stuff like food and stuff. Like he can't transport food or anything yet. It's got to be something that like has like a steady molecular structure, as he explains to our other protagonist of the film, played by Gina Davis. Her name is Veronica
Quaife.
Really? I did not know her last name.
It's close to something else.
Yeah, that's not good.
Ronnie Quaife.
That's why we only say Ronnie. But yeah, she plays Ronnie, who is a reporter. And is she? I think she's a reporter for a science magazine of some sort.
Stathis is the publisher.
That's right. But they meet, Ronnie and Seth meet at some kind of gala.
It's a party thrown by his backers.
Oh, by Seth's donors.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, so, his financial backers, and she's their reporter. reporting on it.
So he's like, so this is supposed to be a party in which like he kind of reveals some stuff or something, like what he's been working on. Mm-hmm. But he chooses, you know, to see the hot reporter over on the corner and just kind of leave. And he's like, here, I'll show you what I'm doing, but no one else. And like, look, I have to say, I like how Gina Davis plays Ronnie in this movie, because there's a great sort of detachment from it. She's very, you know, some might say it's like a little too stoned, you know, like stony on the exterior.
Her?
But I think, yeah, I think it's good.
She's
it's because
cautious,
she's got like a cautious, yeah, feel to her. But what did you think, like, overall of The Fly, like when you saw it? I mean, we're not going to get into like the huge, huge twist here if you haven't seen it in a while, but like,
why wouldn't we? This movie is 35 years old.
Yeah, I guess you're right. So, I mean, okay, so basic overview here, like, you know,
that's what we do on Monster Cast. What are you doing?
Yeah.
Where are you?
Okay, fine. Okay, so essentially here what happens is that Seth does figure out, you know, a way to transport human matter.
He starts by doing animals. He tries to do baboon, and it gets turned inside out. And then she says something to him, like, one night about, like a woman's appetite, like about like being driven crazy. And so he uses that. He like decides to like drive the machine crazy, and he like reworks it somehow and figures out how to send. He successfully sends the baboon.
Yeah. And so he decides, you know, as opposed to like staying back and examining some stuff there, it's like, same night, I'm going to transport myself.
Well, he gets pissed because she's trying to do a story on him in her magazine, but she wants to wait until he's successfully transported what he wants before she does the article. And Stathis wants to publish it early, and he sends Seth, like, this magazine, like, this, like, mock-up.
Yeah.
And so
like
she gets pissed. She takes it in because she like grabs it and leaves really fast, like the first night after they have a little after the baboon goes through. So he gets jealous and thinks that she's going back to Stathis.
Yeah. So he's like, I'll go and transport myself.
Yeah. He's like, screw it, I did the baboon, it's the next
which by the
step.
Well, I mean, by the way, his theory sound like it does work and everything, but as he's transporting himself, wouldn't you know it, Sarah,
common house fly, pesky little jerk,
gets into the pod itself and is transported with Seth,
and he
thus
notice.
begins a crazy amount of Cronenberg grossouts, where Seth realizes that his DNA has been spliced together with the fly.
Yeah, it takes him a long time to figure it out. Like, he just thinks that like going through is like rejuvenated him. Like, he gets like really
like an unintended
strong,
like side effect of the transport process.
He gets like really cut all of a sudden. And he has like a crazy like appetite and like sex drive and stuff like this, and like he and Ronnie are just like doing it nonstop, and she's like kind of weirded out by it. Like, she notices these weird like coarse hairs on his back that she like plucks and has sends for testing, and she just can't keep up with him, and she's like starting to get frustrated because he just like won't recognize that something's wrong.
Yeah, like he's hardly sleeping and stuff too. Like,
and
he's just going.
Yeah, he's like doing like crazy like gymnastic shit, like on the bars.
He's been eating his Wheaties, guys.
Yeah,
he's doing good here.
Yeah, so he gets all pissy and like runs off and finds a prostitute. Like, he just
like you do. That's a healthy way to deal with disappointment.
He goes to a bar to find a prostitute, and she's with another guy, so he just snaps this guy's arm like a freaking twig.
Yeah, which, by the way, I guess we should have said, but like, if you haven't seen this movie and you're queasy in any way,
we can finish the synopsis a little bit. Kind of talk about all the gross outs. But yeah, so he... she sends the tears in that she plucked for testing, and they come back like insect.
Yeah.
And he still like won't believe it. And then like other weird stuff starts happening to him. Like, his fingernails start falling off, and he's like leaking fluids, and he's just like, he's getting blisters all over himself and stuff.
Not a good time.
So he finally like is like, okay, maybe she's right. So he goes back and looks at like the report from his transfer, and he sees
the raw data. He sees that the house fly.
And so he types in like what happened to Fly, and they're like Brundle and Fly genetically spliced.
Yeah, something like that. Like, it's a fascinating sequence there where the computer tells him what we already know.
Yeah.
But after that, of course, he's trying to ferociously try to find, like, some way to, I don't know, cure himself
of
this.
And he's just getting worse and worse, and she's, like, become really distant from him. She's kind of scared of him, and, yeah, it just kind of...
He reaches out for help, but, like, literally at about the last possible second that he could.
Yeah, it's really bad.
And it all climaxes into this insane extremely gross confrontation where Brum, like, he's trying to bring Ronnie through as well.
Yeah, he finds out that she's pregnant, and she's, like, really scared. She wants to have an abortion, and Stathis takes her to see him to tell him, and she can't do it, and he doesn't want her to... He overhears that she's pregnant, doesn't want her to have the abortion, and then he, you know, he's decided that he makes a... He builds a third pod, and he decides that what he's going to do, because he can't stop the transformation, is to merge himself with Veronica and the baby.
Yeah, so they'll all be one big amalgam.
Yeah, so that they'll be just like the ultimate family.
Again, this is like very healthy ways to deal with your problems. Man, this guy's got some issues.
Like, yeah, Stathis like tries to help, and he like attacks him. We can talk about it in a minute. But, and then it ends up like that. He puts her in a pod, tries to do it to her, and she's like screaming, and Stathis helps her. He shoots the cord so that it can't happen, and then he ends up
getting spliced with the pod itself because the door was open when the sequence was happening. Yeah. And
he's like full fly by then.
Yeah, and it all leads to a very kind of heartbreaking moment for Veronica, for Ronnie, when she has to... Well, full spoilers, people. Shoot his head off with a shotgun.
He finally raises his like fly arm and points to his head, like picks up, looks at the gun, points to his head, like telling her, like, end it. Because he's literally just like a mangled mess of like fly and machine.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely a mercy killing at that point, but... Man, oh man, that's some stuff there. So that's a brief little rundown of everything that happens in the movie, the big beats. Of course, we'll get into some specifics, but like overall, what do you think of this movie? Like, you know, do you think that it's a good example of a monster flick? Like, what stood out to you most the first time you saw it? What keeps standing out for you the more times you see it?
It's a great example of a monster flick. Like, if you want to talk about gross out monster, like, this is the one to watch.
Yeah.
Because, like, if you go back and, like, this is a remake, obviously, of like the fly from the 50s or 60s, and that one's just like so weird. Like, it's just like a giant fly head on a guy, and then a little tiny fly with a man head trapped in a web.
That's how it happens in real life, you know. So that's more realistic, but you know.
Yeah, realistic.
Yeah.
But this one is just like, it's just like literally like just a complete like decomposition of him as a human being. Like,
yeah.
He just goes from, I mean, it's like he goes from like being like invigorated and like so like ready, like zest for life, just to like everything just like fall, legitimately, like literally falling apart.
Yeah, there's, so this film is directed by David Cronenberg, and if you don't know David Cronenberg, he's known for, let's just put it politely, the weird stuff.
Oh,
he makes very strange films, you know, but he also, there's two things that really separate Cronenberg from all the other directors. One is his ability to go for a gross out, even in, you know, mundane circumstances. Think the movie A History of Violence, if you're not like that. Like, this is a seemingly mundane, you know, drama-filled movie, but then when the violence happens in that movie, it is... harsh, you know, it is very jarring, and that's certainly at work here too. But Cronenberg is also known a lot for trying to find the beautiful in the macabre, and trying to find like semblances of, you know, divine in gross. And that's like, you know, you think of something like the movie Crash with James Spader and Holly Hunter, about people who are sexually aroused by car crashes. Like, that's what that movie is about. And Cronenberg, he just doesn't shy away from any of these things. He tries to find the humanity in like what you would seemingly think are like the weirdest places. And I think that's always what stands out to me about this movie too, is that it really is kind of about a scientist who loses his way for, you know, like at the beginning of this movie, Seth is he's kind of a very detached personality. You know, he's what you would think like a mad quote scientist would be.
Yeah, he's just like extremely focused on his work, and he doesn't have like a lot of social skills. He's just kind of like, there for science.
Yeah, he doesn't want to be at this gala, you know, at the beginning of this movie.
No, he wants to be like shut up in his apartment talking to his weird computer.
Yeah, it kind of reminds me of like the putting it together scene in the musical Sunday in the Park with George, you know, where it's just like these artists, they don't want to be there. They don't want to schmooze and hobnob. It's what they have to do so they can do their work. Yeah, and it's the exact same way with him. But what I find fascinating about the Brundle character is that because, you know, he is so detached, he's almost Mr. Spock-like for most of this movie, but it is when he has a literal jealous human emotion, a normal human emotion of jealousy, that he gets sloppy enough to where it is literally his undoing. And I don't know exactly what Cronenberg might be saying with that, but it seems that, like, it's literally because he betrays his own, like, hyperlogical sensibilities for a, you know, human emotion of jealousy that, you know, all of a sudden everything he's worked for his whole life is kind of unmade. And there's certainly kind of like a tragic nature to that, especially in how the movie's final shots play out.
Well, the whole film has a really tragic, like, dark feel.
Yeah.
Like, everything. Like, even his apartment, like, his loft is, like, really, like, just, like, dingy.
No, yeah, it's very industrial. I mean,
yeah,
like,
it's very industrial.
I mean, look, I get it. He's, you know, he does his experiments there. That's where he's doing, you know, his stuff. But, like, it feels more like, yeah, like it was, like, an old, like, packing plant or
like,
something.
I really kind of like the relationship between him and Ronnie. It's really, like, I don't know, it's kind of endearing. Like, it's so weird that it's, like, kind of sweet.
No, you're absolutely right. The chemistry between Davis and Goldblum is very palpable.
Yeah.
And it's, like, even in those opening scenes when they're just, like, feeling each other out, you know, like, neither of them really gives the other much of anything, but you could just tell there's some magnetism there, you know? There's something that
it's just
draws,
like,
them together.
I don't know, like, he's so, like, rough, and he just doesn't... I have a feeling that, you know, beyond, like, one-night stands, he hasn't had a lot of female companionship.
Yeah.
And it's just kind of like the way that she, like, comes into his life and, like, takes care of him and, like, cooks for him and just, like... I don't know, it's just kind of sweet. Like,
yeah, but she's also very... you know, she's also kind of the same way, and, you know, like, professionally, she's just, like, very
dedicated,
reserved and very detached.
Yeah.
And, you know, like, I think he sees a perfect foil for himself or a perfect companion for himself.
Yeah.
There.
And it's just, like, when you see, like, his downfall, like, how she, like, they don't have, like, you know, some 3-year relationship. It's just, like, a couple of months. But, like, the way she takes it, like, it's really hard to watch some of the stuff, like, when he, like, you know, is deteriorating, or, like, when he runs off on her and, like, tries to find, like, another, because she can't keep up with his, like, sexual appetites after he goes through. And it's just really, you just feel, like, really bad for her.
Yeah.
Because you can just tell, like, I don't know, there's something just about the, I don't know if it's, like, the actors or the way that their relationship is written, but I just really like it.
Yeah, no, I absolutely agree with you. No matter what you feel about the effects or the story or anything, you cannot deny the actual great chemistry that Gina Davis and Jeff Goldblum have here. And so, and that's another thing that's interesting about Brundle as a character, because, look, Goldblum is, you know, especially at this time in his career, he's a good-looking dude, you know? Like,
he's interesting-looking, but...
Yeah,
yeah.
But, I mean, like, he was, you know, like...
He's shirtless a lot in this movie.
This is a couple of years, too, before the, Dr. Ian Malcolm, like, sexualization that happens to Goldblum in Jurassic Park. But, no, like, especially, like, when the fly DNA starts making him very invigorated and stuff, like, you're right, he's shirtless a lot.
He's because really sweaty and muscly. And
yeah, he's very muscular in this movie.
He literally becomes like an Olympic gymnast.
Yeah, that's true.
Like, he's like climbing the walls and like doing like the parallel bars.
Yeah,
like,
he's becoming Spider-Man essentially
really,
too.
Honestly. And he's just, he's just like, he can like, he brings this girl back to his like loft that's like 9 stories high and he like picks, she's tired, he picks her up and just runs her up like 10 flights of stairs.
Uh-huh.
Like, he's just completely like, completely energized nonstop.
Yeah, which is a very interesting...
And all he wants to eat is sugar.
Yeah, that should be your first clue there. It's scientist man.
Mm-hmm.
I find, you know, I think what Cronenberg is going... And I think you're right. Like, there's a very real sense of sadness and loss in, like, a very slow-moving sadness and loss when Seth realizes what's happened to him and what is happening to him and what's going to happen to him. And once Ronnie comes back into that narrative, there's just such a tragic, I mean, it's almost like Shakespearean, like in the way that it unfolds, because you know, like these two care for each other, but you know that there's literally, you know, Seth has run out of ideas at this point.
Yeah, I mean,
and Ronnie's brought in as he's run out of ideas.
Well,
you know?
And he basically just like wants her there like to document it, and then he wants her to leave because he doesn't know what he'll do.
Yeah.
He can't control himself at this point.
Yeah.
I mean, he brings her, by the time he really realizes what's going on, he like starts like he's walking with a cane, like he he's losing like his teeth and his fingernails, mm-hmm. and like his back and his face are like all blistered and stuff. And he still looks human by this point, but then
he looks humanoid. I'll give you that.
When she comes and like he has to show her everything, like she's like the horror on her face is just like palpable.
Yeah.
I mean, she does a really amazing job of just displaying this like sense of like, but also trying not to like to hold it in as to not show him that she's afraid.
Yeah.
But it's just like, you know, he shows her that he can like climb walls uh-huh. and climb ceiling, and then he shows her how he eats.
Yeah.
And it's so
which is how flies eat.
I mean, it's legit, but I mean, he like literally like loads up a plate of like waffles and donuts, and then he just like sits down and he just like pukes this like acid enzyme onto it, like, and he like melts it, and then he sucks it back up.
Yeah, because flies don't have teeth. And
neither does he anymore.
Neither does he
and then
anymore.
He's like every piece of his body that falls off, he's keeping in his like bathroom like medicine cabinet. He calls it like the Brendel Natural History Museum.
Yeah.
And he has like jars of like his ear and his like skin flecks and his teeth.
Yeah.
And fingernails.
You're right. Like that whole sequence is, you know, countered by really. Man, you could tell, like, Davis is so freaking good in that scene. Like,
yeah,
when she first
yeah.
gets introduced to this new fly world of his, because it's like, again, she still cares for this guy so much, but man, how do you react to anything like that? Like, how do you even not run out of there just screaming your head off?
I know. And, like, it just, then you feel for her so much, because then it just gets worse, because she reveals that she's pregnant.
Yeah.
And she's, like, scared. I mean, she's scared to death.
Scared of what the hell this baby
yeah,
is.
Yeah. I mean,
you know?
This happened
before. She has, like, a dream sequence where it's, like actually, like a
worm. Like a larva.
Like a larva that
yeah.
comes out.
Yeah.
And then I think it somehow kills people, but in her dream. But, mm-hmm. I just think that, like, the way that all of that unfolds is just, you're right, like, it's very bleak, you know? Like, the ending of this film, like, in the last, I think, like, 25-30 minutes of this film is just very bleak lacking of hope.
He gives
you know?
The idea, like, at the end, like, when she goes back to see him that time and she's, like, filming it and stuff, that he, like, you think that he, like, knows he's, like, done for, right? That's what
yeah.
it seems like. But then I think, like, in his desperation, like, at the very end is when he just comes up with this harebrained idea to fuse them all together.
Yeah.
And that's just, like, a last ditch. Like, that's just he's completely lost
yeah,
himself.
Yeah, but I mean, again, you see, like, you know, even in the midst of his turning into a literal, like, fly humanoid creature, he still keeps his, like, scientific sensibilities. I need somebody to document this, to see what happens, you know, like, to, you know, make sure, like, you know, that no matter what I turn into, that it serves some purpose, you know? It's the ultimate scientific mindset. And then again, a regular human emotion about a pregnancy leads him
well,
to make a decision
so
that he never
sad
would make.
Too. Like, she just can't, like, after she sees this all, she just can't bring herself to tell him that she's pregnant. So she, like, leaves, and Stathis is waiting outside for her, and he, like, flies and climbs himself up under the roof, and he overhears them outside talking, and she tells Stathis, like, no, I couldn't tell him. Like, I have to get rid of it. You have to take me tonight.
Yeah.
And so, like, Stathis takes her to this abortion clinic in the middle of the night, and she's, like, in there ready to have it, and then he, like, Spider-Mans himself through the window and takes her.
Yeah.
He takes her from the abortion clinic
because
he doesn't want her to do it.
Which is very Creature from the Black Lagoon, which I feel like, you know, Cronenberg's playing with a lot of, like, old
monster movie
monsters,
tropes.
Like, yeah, tropes there. So... Look, I said there's two things that Mark Cronenberg, which is what we've been talking about, that kind of tragic/divine in the macabre, but also just the damn grossest stuff you will ever see in a film.
Yeah, I mean, they don't hold back at all. And, like, I mean, the
no.
stuff we've already been talking about that's to come.
I'm going
to
look up real quick who the effects were on this, because I think I know it feels like a Rick Baker movie, but, you know, I think that that's probably who it is, but, let's see here. Let's see. We got, nope, not right there. But, while I'm looking that up, like, so what do you, like, look, I know that it takes a lot to gross you out, like, just, you know, personally and everything, but I feel like this movie probably comes about as close as any can to grossing you out in that sense.
I think because this is more like, campy monster movie that it's like, it doesn't gross me out as much as some, like, horror, like, gore fests do. Like, I can't do, like, Hostel because I can't do just, like, the unnecessary, like, torture and cutting and things like that.
Yeah, the torture porn thing, yeah.
So those really, those get to me as far as gross. But this one, yeah, there are a couple moments in this one, like I said, like the vomiting on the food and sucking it back up. And then this final confrontation with Stathis where he, like, he does it to him. Like, and he does what he does to his food to Stathis. And it's like this, you know, like Stathis bursts in and, like, after he takes her from the abortion clinic, Stathis bursts in with, like, a freaking sawed-off shotgun.
Yeah,
and
I mean,
like, you know, and
like all magazine executives have.
And Brundle feels like the threat, so he literally liquefies one hand and one leg of Stathis's, and it's really gross.
And it does not hold back. And the makeup was by Shonuk Jabor, which, you know, felt like Rick Baker to me, but it wasn't. But kudos to them. But
yeah, I will say, like, even before that, like, the whole, like, we were talking about, like, with all his body parts, like, in the bathroom and stuff, like, it is very graphic. Like, the way he looks, like, in that last scene, like, when she's trying to get away from him, she hits him in the face and his entire jaw just falls
just, like,
off.
Rips off.
And that's when he, like, goes full fly. Like, his head just emerges, like, all of his skin.
Well, and I mean, like, even before that is when he finally invites her back in, you know, that's where I think the makeup is just at its best in this, because you're right, like, the blisters are all over. There's hardly anything that you can recognize as Goldblum anymore. Yeah,
he does this, like, gross, like, because
he's like talking through there, like, like, a lot of breaths in between, and, like, through his teeth, slurping noises. It's very, very unsettling. But again, though, that it takes a special kind of actor to be able to actually portray some humanity through that much makeup. And, you know, you think of, like, the Elephant Man movies or something like that. This is Goldblum doing a great job of, like, showing a man that, you know, he's literally got to be losing his mind seeing what's happening to himself, but also he's still, like, trying to find purpose.
Yeah, he's trying to show,
which,
like,
is weird.
Like, he's trying to, like, demonstrate, like, okay, this is science, but he also doesn't, like, he wants to do it in the comfort of his own home. He will not allow her to take him to a doctor because he doesn't want to be a lab rat.
Yeah.
So he only wants to do it on his terms.
Right.
But yeah, you're right. Like, that whole sequence is just, like,
that's where it's just, like, all of a sudden, because I mean, like, look, you know, hairs in the back, you know, like, some a blister here on his, you know, on his
head. See, for
me,
I don't do well with teeth removal.
Nope.
Or fingernail
removal. Nope. Not at all.
I mean, go ahead, clip your nails, but, like, a nail snapping off, like, there's this
no, 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 no
sitting there, like, taking teeth out of a girl's head. And, like, those are really small, dumb things, but, like, teeth and fingernails bother me.
Yeah, bother me, too.
And he is, like, this movie is all over the teeth and fingernails. He loses every teeth in his head. Like, he'll just, like, pull a slimy nail off and, like, all this, like, nasty fly fluid just drips out. It's gross.
It is so gross. And, again, this is kind of what Cronenberg's known for. But yeah,
but it's effective.
Yeah, and I mean, like, again, but then there's also just like kind of the brutal violence, like in the bar, you know, like with the arm snapping, which again,
like arm wrestles a guy for this like hooker lady to go home with him, and he like legitimately just like within seconds just like snaps this guy's arm backwards,
like the bone comes out through the body. I mean, it is absolutely disgusting and jarring. And again, I think that there's like a, you know, sometimes when directors do that in movies, like when they go for hyper violence like that, sometimes it's just, it can look so fake that it detaches you from whatever you're watching. Think something like the Hatchet movie, you know, like there's violence in that, but it's so like just over the top that it's just like, it's like you're watching like avatars, you know, it's like you're watching cartoons basically get murdered. But like in this one, the violence Cronenberg puts in his movies is always hyper realistic looking. And that's the problem, is like, even though you're watching like a sci-fi monster adventure, you still feel grounded because of how he does it, because of how he shoots the film, and because of how all the close-ups he does and the eerie score and such. It grounds the movie and it makes it feel almost real, you know?
Yeah, I mean, like, honestly, like the transformation into an insect is so realistic. Like,
yeah.
It just makes me want to, like, I just want to like take a fly and look at it under the microscope, under a magnifying glass, and be like, okay, yeah, that's what they're going for. Because like it is like everything about like a fly's makeup, like everything about a fly, like they incorporate into his transformation.
Yeah.
Like it's just crazy like how well they do. It really is. I think it's amazingly well done, especially for 1986.
Yeah, no, and that's the other thing is like the effects are so freaking.
I mean, like the first time he transports the baboon and it comes out inside out, like when he opens the pod, like it's just absolutely disgusting.
It's awful. And that's really our first gross out moment. It's still alive. I mean, it's just literally its insides are out and its outsides are in, is just a terrifying thing to think of.
It's just gross. I mean, it's just really. And like, I think like I said, like it's a remake. If you go back and, you know, the first one is, it was the first time, and I'm pretty sure Vincent Price is in it, and it's...
It was Vincent Price, yeah.
And, it, you know, for its time, it was revolutionary. The thought of it is really scary, the plot, man turning into insect and merging and trying to prevent his family from finding out, but, like, the way that it's done, it's just kind of silly. You know, like, they're trying to, like... they're trying to capture like their daddy fly outside because it got out.
Yeah.
Like honestly, like it's really like, and for the time I'm sure it was very scary, but like if you look back at it now, it just looks really kind of funny. But like,
yeah,
they really amp it up in this remake. Like they take it to the complete next level.
Yeah.
The transformation is just like, it's something to behold.
You get the sense that it's just like, you know, you have the ability to do this in a more horrific way now.
Cause it is a horrific thing. I mean, seriously.
No, there's no glamour, glamoring up, turning into a fly, a human fly, you know,
hybrid
humanoid thing here. There's no glamming that up. And, you know, that in that sense, again, Cronenberg is the perfect director to try and bring that stuff out there. If you want to know, Cronenberg is actually in this movie. He makes an appearance as one of the doctors, I believe, in the dream sequence.
Oh, delivers the larva.
Yeah, and apparently that was because Martin Scorsese saw a bunch of his films and wanted to meet Cronenberg so bad. And then when they finally met, Scorsese told him that he looked like a Beverly Hills plastic surgeon. And so that's what inspired Cronenberg to put himself in the movie, supposedly, according to, you know, like, well, I don't know, just all this stuff that you read about this movie online. So you mentioned Vincent Price there. Another like funny little bit of trivia there is that yes, Vincent Price was in the original Fly movie, I believe from the 1950s.
Yeah.
And Goldblum apparently like sent him a letter saying that quote, like I think it said, "I hope you like mine as much as I liked yours," which is a great like cool thing because you see Goldblum nowadays and he's just kind of embraced his weirdness, which I honestly kind of love about him, like. That he's just super quirky and super weird, and he's totally okay with
it. To be completely honest, I don't know that I could see another actor in this role.
No, and that's a good question because I'm trying to look up right now if like anybody else was considered for this because honestly, it's like. You know, I've had the debate with people before whether Goldblum is a good actor or he's just good at playing Goldblum. And I think that's an interesting conversation to have. I understand why people do have it. But at the same time, I don't think you can deny that there's amazing skill in this actor.
Yeah, I mean, sure, he's typecast and he only has to him play certain roles. But, like, yeah, I think he's really talented. Like, there's definitely, like, talent there.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I, you know, and again, it takes, you know, the fact that you can see Brundle's humanity, you know, in the midst of all of that, I think it was like 5 pounds of makeup that he was wearing.
Holy moly.
Like, you know, the fact that you can see his humanity still coming through and you can still see like the regret and of his hubris and stuff as a scientist and stuff. Like the fact that you can still see that through all the makeup. I mean, not every actor can do that. Not every professional Hollywood actor can do that.
I mean, I think like the scene where he, like, I mean, yeah, of course, all of it when he like has the makeup on like it's got to be crazy hard to do, but I mean just like the scene when he is like talking to his computer and he realizes what happened, like he exhibits like this sheer terror, but it's like super understated, like you can feel it there, but it's all
in the eyes. That's the thing, it's just like
the way the character is, he's not an overly emotional or, you know, he's a scientist,
yeah,
everything is very minimal.
No, you're right,
but like you can see like just the holy shit moment that he has.
It's somebody who's literally like dueling with his like logical, like hyper, like curious brain of just like, oh my gosh, what does this mean? What are the implications that this
What's
could be?
Gonna
Wait a minute.
I'm turning into a fly. I'm like, I am an insect.
I am going to be an insect. I cannot do this.
Yeah, it's crazy.
Yeah. So. Well, and I mean, like, I think that that's like, if there's a downfall of this movie in certain people's eyes, I think is that like, and actually this is what Vincent Price wrote back to Goldblum was that, you know, he said he thought it was wonderful right up to a point that it went a little too far. And so I think that that's going to be one of the common criticisms of the movie is that, you know, does Cronenberg indulge the graphicness a little bit too much in this film?
Sure,
in
but your I mind? Think that's what makes it great.
Yeah.
For me.
No, I agree. Like, I think, look, it's not like he's like giving you a false sense of what his palate is here. I mean, like, he goes gross out with that baboon pretty quick in this
movie.
Yeah,
I don't think there's, like, I mean, I don't know. I mean, I guess for someone like me who doesn't scare easily, yeah, and, like, gross stuff doesn't really bother me. You know, I said, like, that my teeth and fingernail thing. But other than that, none of it really bothers me. So, I mean, I don't think that, for me, it doesn't go too far. I think it's just, it's great. It's a monster movie. What do you want?
No, exactly. And I mean, and again, like, it would be different if, like, you know, like, he turns the baboon inside out, but you never see it. You know, like if it's like, just like there, if all of a sudden, like, you just get to the bar and he's like breaking arms and all of a sudden the blisters come out. But Cronenberg establishes very early in this movie what kind of violence we're dealing with, what kind of gross outs we're dealing with.
Yeah, I mean, we're saying that, like, I mean, I guess, like, the criticism you're saying is that people think, like, the grossness goes too far. Like, the use of makeup and, like, that kind of stuff. Is that what we're talking about?
Yeah.
Like, not the plot line. Like, because that... Okay, well, I mean, sure, but, yeah, I mean, maybe we didn't need that last year.
Yeah, I mean, like, look, it doesn't...
Removed. But, I mean...
Yeah.
Like,
I think
I
that's
said,
probably what Price is going for there. You know, like, maybe with, like, the pulling out of the teeth and, like, you know, melting off somebody's hand, you know?
But, like, don't you think, like, that's, like...
I totally do.
A campy sci-fi, like,
yes,
that's like half of its greatness.
Yes, I totally do. And again, it's because like that stuff, the gross outs are done in a realistic manner. Like, you know, like they are taken very seriously. It's not just like, it's not like buckets of blood, like
yeah,
in Kill
Bill
or
there,
something.
Like, for show, like it's happening for a reason. Like everything that I mean, sure, okay, maybe the arm break in the bar, but that's like to show like his strength and like his veracity. And then like all of the every like piece of gross skin or whatever that falls off, that's to show like he's shedding his human form. Like,
yeah,
it's I mean, yeah, there's a couple, I will say, like, there's a, like a moment when he's like crouching on the roof like listening to them talk and he looks like this like turtly lumpy gross thing. I mean, it's just kind of like, oh, okay.
Yeah.
But I mean, I think I don't know. I like it. I think like the camp is what makes it what it is.
Yeah, exactly.
Like if you tone it down, then it just becomes like a okay, it's the fly. I mean, I think like when I think about the fly, I'm just like, yeah, ooh.
Yeah,
like,
blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, but it is what it is for a reason.
Yeah, exactly. Well, and you know, the other thing that this movie kind of evokes is like Franz Kafka's The Metamorphosis.
Mm-hmm.
You know, for the obvious reason of a man turning into a bug, but it's also like that whole movie is about, you know, like changing into something you, or that whole novel rather is about changing into something you don't recognize, and you know, having to deal with it. And I think that doesn't it, like, I think Brundle like has a line too where he says like, you know, I was like an insect in a man's body or
yeah,
something
he has
like
this
that.
Very deep line about becoming
yeah.
an insect in a man's body and a man in a
something
a
is
world.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Let me see if I can find it because it's like a very
something. Doesn't he say he has
yeah.
a dream?
So yeah, he
yeah.
said. So the line is, I'm saying I'm an insect who dreamt he was a man and loved it,
right.
But now that dream is over and the insect is awake.
Is awake.
So again, I think you're right. That's like a very deep line about how Seth views himself and how, you know, like he is, you know, not a typical person, you know, like he doesn't seem to fit into his society and
yeah,
to this
I mean,
world.
You could absolutely take this like on another level besides just man turning into fly. It's this like very, like, I don't know, like primitive, like held back, detached man who got to have a glimpse of a different life. Like he gets a glimpse of like being with her. He gets a glimpse of, like, having the fame and the notoriety for his work. Like, it's finally, like, working what he's doing. And, like,
yeah.
he gets this glimpse of having this other life, and then it gets completely taken away from him. So,
yeah.
like, I mean, yeah, you can look at it on that level, too. It can be more than just man turning into fly, but, like, you know, also
yeah.
man losing everything.
No, and I mean, like, it's definitely... There's subtext to this, you know, like another hallmark of Cronenberg. He puts a lot of subtext, a lot of, you know, hidden meanings into everything he's doing there. And it's a good script. It's a deep script. It's got its moments like that. That is a really profound line, you know, that Brundle gets to say there. But ultimately, yeah, it's a monster movie. So you're going
yeah,
to a monster movie.
At the
movie.
Heart of it, yeah, yeah. There's absolutely like some deeper stuff if you want to go there. But like, yeah, at the heart of it, it's the fly.
Yeah, it's the fly. It's not the transformation of man to fly.
Like, I mean, it is like when I've watched it like over the years, like with a couple years in between, like getting older, like in between watches, and like I think the first couple of times, like there were things that I missed that I didn't quite understand.
Absolutely,
because it is like a little bit like scientifically like deep.
Yeah.
Like some of the stuff that they talk about, and some of like the way that like Seth talks, like he just is very like. He talks like, I don't know. It's hard to say, like, you know what I mean though? Like,
well, he's very understated, you know, like he doesn't raise his voice a lot.
He's very like, understated, but like everything he says is like very scientific. It's very like nothing he said, you know, he never tells her that he loves her. He,
oh
never,
yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know, everything is just very like, I don't know. It's
Spock.
Just,
it's Mr. Spock.
It is. It's very, I'm at a loss for words.
Yeah.
Here,
it's very Vulcan.
It is very Vulcan. So like when you watch it, like, when you're a teenager or whatever, it's just kind of like, I don't know. There's definitely things that I missed until I was older and could understand what they were really talking about.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's a very sciencey movie.
Yeah, no, it embraces its science and, rightfully so. It's the key crux of it.
It took me more than one watch to really like it.
And again, like even, you know, the obvious first meaning of this is also about the perils of science, you know, an unbridled science.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, to quote another Jeff Goldblum character, you spend so much time thinking about can you do it, you never stop to think if you should do
mm-hmm.
it.
Mm-hmm.
And so obviously there's a whole Charlie Brooker type thing of, you know, is this technology good inherently, you know? So like maybe leaps and bounds happen, but
sometimes they
leap a little too far, and you know, we're not ready for them. And you know, much like Seth shouldn't have jumped in that pod, you know, like, and of course it's an accident, you
know? I mean, but it's such a small thing to think about, like, okay, like, yeah, fly got in there, woohoo. But, like, do you think, like, I'm sure he had no idea,
no,
like, that's what the computer was going to do.
There's no way of knowing that. And also, you're right, like, it's the fact that it's, like, literally something that you don't even notice that torches the whole thing, you know? So, again, like, those unintended consequences, you know, like, of scientific exploration and stuff.
I think
NASA flights that blew up before taking off, or the Challenger explosion, you know, like, there's times when, like, even if you think you've made all the right preparations in science, something can go wrong. The
right.
littlest
so,
thing.
Like, that's like this is his machine. Like he designed it. So like I don't know. Did it have a will of its own to splice them together? I mean, you would think that since it's just a teleporter, that it would just teleport man and fly to the other pod.
Right.
So what?
So when, why did it splice them together?
Yeah, it just made them into one being.
And I mean, the only thing I can think of there is that, you know, like since it was the flesh that was giving him problems,
right.
you know, that like when he solved it in one way, like the computer then like literally only thinks of it in that way. So it
because
sees two
it
flesh
does
sources.
And transport it. It takes everything apart genetically and puts it back
and
together.
And then puts
in
it back together
pod.
On the other side. Yeah.
So I guess it just didn't read it as two separate, or it did. And it just, I don't know. It's a really
right.
odd thing. Like why is that what
yeah
happens?
Don't think too hard about the science of that, but
I don't think they do either.
Yeah,
it just happens.
It'll hurt your brain.
I can't remember what his experiment is in the first one that does it. I don't think it's teleporting.
No, I don't think it is either, but in the Vincent Price one,
yeah,
yeah, I honestly can't remember that either.
Vincent
but,
Price isn't the fly either. He's like their uncle, like their friend.
Yeah,
but I don't remember. It's been a long time, but anyways, yeah,
yeah,
it's definitely the first one's definitely not as sciencey.
No.
Getting out down to the bare bones like this one does.
It's a lot more Bela Lugosi even for
the
50s.
Yeah.
But
it's a lot more like,
yeah. the trailers of just women reveal. Screaming and then really like a logo.
Giant
So this movie was pretty successful. It was made on an estimated $15 million budget. It opened at $7 million domestically. It grossed $40 million domestically, and then worldwide it added on another $15 million. So it ended up grossing about $60 million.
Pretty good for the 80s.
So yeah, pretty profitable. It was a pretty well-reviewed movie. On IMDb, it sits at a 7.5.
It's pretty good for a horror movie.
Out of 10, which is great for a horror movie. But the Metacritic, which is, you know, they aggregate all of those, is actually 79 out of 100. Mm-hmm. So that'd be about what you would say on a tomato meter back in that time. So, I mean, like, it would be a certified fresh movie today, speaking in terms of Rotten Tomatoes. But, I mean, like, you see a lot of, like, 100 scores for this and then, like, a 25. So, I mean, like, you know, it's... It is what it is. I mean, it's a true Cronenberg.
You have to embrace it for what it is, because if you don't, then you're not going to like it.
Yeah. Well, I mean, like, the stuff, the reviews are all over the place. Like, you know, there's some that call it, like, a masterpiece here. You know, like, the Boston Globe said, like, it's a rare species of a movie, a remake that far surpasses the original and, quite frankly, all expectations.
Yeah, I mean, and I agree with that.
Yeah. The Los Angeles Times said, you know, like, what makes it such a stunning piece of obsessive filmmaking is the way Cronenberg definitely allows us to identify with his monstrous creation. Absolutely. I totally feel that too. Then you got the guy from the San Francisco Chronicle who says this picture is disgusting and gives it a 25 out of 100.
It is disgusting, but that doesn't earn it a 25. It's supposed to be disgusting.
Yeah. Maybe a little easier is the New York Times critic who said that it's a film that tries to be too many things at once. Funny but not campy. Sad and scary. A horror story and a human tragedy.
It is. That's great.
Yeah. So, I mean, like, I can see how people are conflicted about the movie, you know, like, because... You know, even if you have a good story, good performances, the gross out can be a barrier that some critics and some filmgoers can't get over.
Ah, losers.
Yeah, they are losers. But I mean, let's just be for real. No, but I think that that's like a great legacy of the movie.
And you're
too,
right.
Though.
Like, it's hard for me to think about, like, other people watching this and not liking it because of the gross out, because I love that stuff.
Yeah, it doesn't bother us. But...
Like, for me, that amplifies the movie. But, like, yeah, I mean, I guess I have to take into consideration that a lot of people don't like gross, nasty horror movies. So, yes, that would be tough to watch for some people.
Wait. Are you telling me there's people out there that don't enjoy the sight of a man's hand melting off of his body?
Yeah, just like they don't enjoy a man regurgitating his food and eating it again.
Well, I'm just going to go on record that I don't want to know those people.
No, I don't want to be a part of that.
Yeah, I'm good without it. all right, well, I think that's all I got to say about The Fly. You got anything else?
No, I mean, you said I like it more than you, so what makes you think that?
Oh, I don't know. It's just like you like gross out stuff a little bit more than me. But
I feel like I always want to watch this movie.
Yeah,
watch The Fly.
You're always just like, oh, The Brundle Fly. You know, so.
I don't know why.
I think you want to be the Brundlefly is the thing, man.
I don't know that I want to be the Brundlefly. Maybe Ronnie. I'm
just
a Gina
blow
Davis
and
fan.
Blow its head off.
I don't know. I can't really give you like a number of like list of reasons. I just like it.
Yeah, I think I do too.
If I'm going down a list of monster movies, I can't think of a lot of better ones.
Yeah. I totally agree with that. So, and again, as I said, I think that it crafted a good legacy, a good jumping off point for other movie monsters that we see later. You think of the Creeper from Jeepers Creepers, you know, any number of gross out things like Slither and James Gunn, you know, like we did last year. You can see a direct line from like the way that they do their gross out effects in The Fly into how they did them in those movies as well.
Yeah, but I think like what I like the most about The Fly versus like those other horror like creature movies that you just talked about is like those creatures are all like evil creatures like coming to attack people.
Yeah.
The Fly is just like poor old Jeff Goldblum that got spliced together with the stinking house fly.
His own hubris and his own tragedy.
I think that's what makes it even scarier. It's like these other ones like are just like made up creatures that hunt every 27 years or whatever. This is like a legitimate like guy's science experiment that just got completely effed up. And
it is bold to make the villain of your film a little house fly.
Really?
Like, that is a bold choice.
That's why I like it, I think. I think I just figured it out.
Yeah, there you go.
Because it's not like, he's not like an evil monster.
We solved the critical consensus of The Fly.
Man, I gotta watch The Fly right now.
Dude, we're gonna do it. Okay. all right. That is going to do it for this episode of Monster Cast. All right. We've gotten you our franchise with Paranormal Activity. We've given you our monster movie. Coming up next is going to be our ghost story. And we are very, very excited because it's one of, I think, the best horror films of the past decade.
Whoa.
I think this is wonderful. We are going to be breaking down Mike Flanagan's Oculus. So that's going to be a really, really good one there. But of course, MonsterCast is not just these four spotlights. It is all over the network. Every single show is going into the horror film realm this month. And there's still a ton left for you to get in on. Classics is going back to 1931 to look at Bela Lugosi's Dracula. Phil Rockwell and Pop Culture Draft Night, they're doing a ghost draft of TV and movie ghosts. I'm really hoping Bathsheba from The Conjuring is in there somewhere. Or Sarah hopes any of them from 13 and Ghosts is in there.
The Jackal.
Yeah. Okay. Whatever. We're not. We're not. Doing
I can't
this.
Do this again.
We're not doing this
can't
again.
Fight you
okay.
This again.
no, but there's that flashback is coming back, and they're going to be looking at Wes Craven's new Nightmare. And we've got some full disclosure reviews too, of like Zombieland 2, Little Monsters on Hulu. Tons and tons and tons of content. So go and find us frnpod.com or nprillinois.org. And of course on social media, Front Row Network on Facebook and Instagram, and Front Row Reviews with a Z on Twitter.
Whoa.
I think I'm done talking now. All right, that's going to do it for this episode of MonsterCast 2019 for the Front Row Network. I'm Jeremy Gechner.
I'm Sarah Baltusevich Gechner.
And we will see you in the front
Watch
row.
Watch out for those flies, guys.
Yeah, they are evil. Yeah, just kill them all.
Just get us water.
This episode is a production of the Front Row Network, a proud Community Voices member of National Public Radio, Illinois. For more information and to see the full slate of Front Row Network shows, you can visit frnpod.com or nprillinois.org. You can also find and follow us on social media by searching for the Front Row Network on Facebook and Instagram, and Front Row Reviews with a Z on Twitter.